Welcome to Bellwether Friends, definitely not the first podcast featuring a discussion on pop culture and why we think you should like what we like.
And you should trust us because it's the summer.
Every couple of weeks, Anna and I will get together with, I don't know, things to eat or drink or maybe not. And
Dr. Pepper.
Okay, awesome. I have ginger beer and chat about a couple of pop culture topics, what we think, how we feel. We'll end the show with our current obsessions. Who are we? I'm Carolyn, a librarian living in Chicago who watches way too much TV.
And I'm Anna, a librarian in Western Massachusetts who is obsessed with coloring at the moment.
Oh, do you have coloring books?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've been coloring.
Oh. What coloring books do you have?
I got the Secret Garden postcards.
Oh.
But I also have started the Enchanted Forest inky quest and coloring book.
Goodness. Books. I'm curious, what do you use to color?
I have a set of Prismacolors that I've had since high school.
Whoa.
And
you're like hardcore.
Actually, well, I haven't used them much since. It says on the front, new, complete 90s color range.
Nice.
Some of them are getting a little bit small, and I've replaced a couple of colors, but I think that's worked for me. It's really dangerous to contemplate, like, if I committed to coloring,
uh-huh,
the kind of art supplies that I would then naturally require.
Oh, I know. Our friend Valerie Forrestal gave me a couple of coloring books for my birthday, along with a whole big pack of crayons.
Excellent.
So those have been fun, too.
So some of the detail on this, especially the Secret Garden one, is like really, really tiny.
Yes.
So if you, like, you have to like keep sharpening between things, or you would ideally you would want some really, really fine tip markers, maybe. I don't know.
I know, but then you worry about the bleed, right?
Right. This is, I haven't thought about these things for a long time.
But it's very soothing.
It is soothing. It's super soothing. I've been enjoying coming home and being like, I'm going to color now. But I've been doing it while listening to Gray. So.
Oh. So you've been finding your happy place while you listen to it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So we're gonna do a little bit of Robert's Rules, and we have some new business.
Yep.
To take care of. So
site business.
So what's our new business, Anna?
Our new business is we have a second review on our iTunes page. Hooray!
Yay!
So it's not just Amy, who we already know likes us. Thanks, Amy. So Whovian277.
Oh.
Do you know who that is?
No.
I don't either.
So but I presume they're a Dr. Who
I
fan.
Assume they know who we are. The subject line is wonderful.
Oh.
We'll take it. Thank you.
Yeah.
It says, I love the show as I heard about it via Two Bossy Dames and binged all the episodes. Listen to them. They win at life.
We win at life!
I know! Don't you feel... We should just stop right now.
Wow. Well, yeah, signing off. Oh my god.
So thank you, Whovian277.
Yeah, and thank you,
and Two Bossy Dames.
Yeah.
We appreciate you. And on the subject of Two Bossy Dames, our friend Margaret, friend of the show.
First guest host.
First guest. Mrs. Friday, next, one half of Two Bossy Dames, has a new podcast with a couple of friends of hers called Appointment Television, and they just released their first episode last week, so if you like us, you might like them.
Uh-huh. Definitely.
You should go check them out.
Yeah.
And on a related note, another friend of ours, Kristen Lalonde, has a podcast about comics in libraries,
yeah,
and they answer all sorts of questions that you might have about how to get started reading comics, where should you go, where to go if you need to make the case for comics in your library. In their podcast, it's her and, I'm blanking on his name, Tom?
Sure. I was going to say Chris, but okay.
We're going to have to edit this part out. No.
That wouldn't be good. Chris and Kristen. I'm going to guess it's not Chris.
Tom. It is Tom.
Yay, Tom.
And their podcast. It's called Secret Stacks.
Yeah.
They have 4 episodes. And the first one is, especially the page, which I shared as a link on our Twitter feed, but we'll also link in this episode, is like a great jumping off place if you have just had random questions about libraries and comics. So
yeah, awesome. And Kristen is amazing, and I could listen to her for hours.
Yeah.
So I highly recommend Secret Stacks. Yeah.
Me too.
Yeah. Very good. Very okay. good. I feel like I was going to say something about, oh, I know what I was going to say. So when we aired our last episode, we asked everyone to tweet us with GIFs of their celebrity crushes, and it was quite possibly my favorite thing on the internet ever.
Oh my god, and it took off for sure. Thanks yeah. again, Bossy James.
Yeah, thanks to Bossy James. But just seeing everyone like remembering people that they had a crush on, and then, oh, what about this person, and don't forget about that person, and it was just, it was so much fun.
It was super fun.
Yeah, so we definitely need to do something well, like that.
Do you know what episode this is?
I might. Do you want to tell me what episode?
This is our 25th episode.
This is like,
so we're having
silver.
our quarter life crisis. To quote John Mayer.
Like some John Mayer. No. Yes, 25. Can you believe it?
Not really.
I
feel like
either.
We should be taking a permanent hiatus any second now.
Yeah, so one of the things we were thinking about was having people send us celebratory gifts.
Yeah.
In honor of 25 episodes.
Yeah, why not? It's a good excuse to break out your gifts.
Absolutely.
Or gifs.
Whatever. Just I will say that when this episode goes live, I will not be near any sort of internet, so you will have to celebrate without me.
Okay. Well, maybe you could make a gif of yourself celebrating.
I will. I will.
You find the one of Val dancing somewhere around.
That'll be perfect. So summer movies. So we've actually seen a lot of movies this summer. We saw Pitch Perfect, and we saw yep. Magic Mike XXL.
But Elizabeth Banks.
With Elizabeth Banks, who, I don't know if you saw the tweet, but she's also in Realtor.com commercials.
Okay.
She's everywhere.
She is everywhere.
But we've seen some other movies.
Yeah, I have seen so many movies this summer.
Some good, some not as good.
I'm not sure which we've overlapped on, so I think we should just have a general discussion.
All right, yeah. So actually, I think you've seen one that I have not seen. So a couple of weekends ago, I went and saw Ant-Man.
Okay, I saw that.
Yeah, and then this weekend, I took the kid to see Minions.
Okay, we saw that.
Yeah. What and, have you seen?
So on Sunday, Surly Spice and I looked at the schedule, and we very carefully mapped it so that we could see 3 movies.
You are crazy. Did you stop for food in the middle of this?
We had popcorn and not pay full price for any of them.
Oh.
So we paid like $5.50 for the first 2 and $8 for the last one.
Oh, okay.
So all together for our 3 movies, it was about $50, nice. including our drink and popcorn.
Excellent.
It was a perfect way to spend a kind of gross weather day.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah,
in
yeah.
the summer. So the third one we saw was Trainwreck.
Yes, okay.
Which we can discuss.
Yes, which I haven't seen, really want to, probably won't see it anytime soon.
It's okay.
But let's talk about...
We'll talk about our overlap, and then I'll...
And then you talk about Trainwreck.
Yeah, yeah. Declaim about... Trainwreck.
Let's talk about Ant-Man first.
Okay.
Okay, so Marvel superhero film. I had not heard of Ant-Man before this
movie. Me either.
I did not know there was an Ant-Man. And to be honest, when I saw that it was Paul Rudd, like, I love Paul Rudd, I really do, but I was skeptical.
Well, that's, I mean, so you know that I don't really want to go to any male-dominated superhero movies.
Yeah, you're done with them.
Right, so I went anyway, and we had watched Clueless the night before.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And it's amazing how much Paul Rudd has not changed very much. I'm wondering about his beauty regime or whatever.
You have the picture in the attic. So.
Right. And, you know, it, as expected, did not have very many female characters. I did appreciate the... I guess we should say that we might spoil these films while we're talking about them.
With all of our movie episodes, we'll probably spoil it.
So if you like that, yay. I appreciated how at the end, because I spent the whole movie being like, why can't his daughter wear this suit? Why can't his daughter wear the suit? Why can't his daughter wear the suit?
Yeah.
So I appreciated the little twist at the end. But, yes. You know, okay. It was basically her and then, like, the kid and the kid's mom. So that was it for female characters in Ant-Man.
Yeah, there were not a lot at all.
Well, and Hayley Atwell.
Briefly in the beginning, yes.
Very briefly.
And an oddly young computer digitized young Michael Douglas.
Right, that was so weird.
It was really weird and I kept staring at his teeth and it was creeping me out.
It was super weird. Okay, so I don't know if we need to describe the plot of Ant-Man, but well, let's take a shot. Whereas Paul Rudd is a convict being released from prison, mm-hmm. and Michael Douglas is an inventor who was once Ant-Man.
Yeah.
And he has decided that Paul Rudd would be the perfect guy to become Ant-Man to steal his secrets away from the guy who took over his company.
Right, who's developed another kind of Ant-Man suit.
Yes.
Yeah.
And
hijinks ensue.
Hijinks ensue. It's like a heist movie.
It is. It's a total heist movie. Yeah.
And it has a lot of humor, uh-huh. which I appreciated.
It was funny. Yeah. I liked it. I thought, you know, it had good supporting characters. It definitely did not feel like it took itself too seriously, which I appreciated because it was Paul Rudd in a superhero movie.
Yes. And I think that Edgar Wright,
uh-huh.
co-writing it, had a lot to do with that, probably. You know, Shaun of the Dead guy.
Yes. Which I was surprised to see he... So later I went and read a bunch of stuff and I saw that he'd been involved kind of from the beginning. But I was really surprised to see his name associated with it when we went to go see it. Because that was not what I was expecting at all. But it was... You could tell his stamp was there.
Yeah, and I think that was for the best.
Uh-huh.
I would say that, like Guardians of the Galaxy, it was fun and didn't take itself too seriously, and the stakes were lower uh-huh. in that, you know, like a building got demolished, but I expected Michael Douglas to totally bite it. Right?
Yeah.
Isn't the father figure supposed to die?
Yes, and pass the torch, kind of, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Like, let's talk about Evangeline Lilly's haircut.
It was a wig, right?
I guess, yeah.
Oh my gosh. It never moved. It had to have been a wig.
Yeah, I don't know. I think they need to work on that for the future. So it seems like they're going to add Ant-Man to the event, like the future Avengers Marvel ensemble movies.
Right. And I don't know if you stayed until the end, but...
I did.
There seemed to be a little teaser for Captain America's Civil War.
Yeah.
So that was exciting. So I don't know if Ant-Man's going to be in that, too.
I don't know. I guess.
I do have to say, with Ant-Man, my favorite part was when he was, like, fighting the bad guy, and then, he's on this train, and then it pulls back, and it's a Thomas the Train.
Right. That was pretty awesome.
That was
good. You can get that from the trailer.
Yeah. They played a lot of... They played that really well. So, overall, it was a good summer movie. It's a nice way to spend an hour and a half.
So when you say a good summer movie, what are you looking for when you go to a movie in the summer? Like,
I honestly don't want to think too much. Like, I want good effects and lots of action, and I want to laugh, and I want to be like, wow, I'm glad I saw that in the theater, because that was really cool, and then I don't really need to think about it too much after I leave.
So I, when I was looking at the schedule for all of these, I adamantly tried to avoid the 3D versions.
Yes, I do too.
So my position on 3D is that I have glasses already. Yes. And every time I've tried the 3D, I've been like, well, okay. I'm not sure that wasn't worth the added $5 or whatever.
No, it never is. And also the 3D glasses make everything darker.
Yeah.
It drives me nuts.
And I already have like a predisposition toward motion sickness. Yes! Like the Hunger Games, the first Hunger Games, I only saw half of it because I couldn't look at the screen. So I find that adding the third dimension does not help.
No. I don't like 3D and will go out of my way to avoid it.
Yeah. So and these are not reviews of the 3D version.
No. And I also find that a lot of times with these movies, the 3D is an afterthought and they add it on at the end. And it's like, like some movies are filmed for 3D. And so a lot of thought has been put into how can we make this, you know, how can we kind of exploit that technology? But when it's just thrown on at the end,
yeah,
not worth it.
Down with 3D.
Down with 3D. Old ladies down with 3D. So,
let's.
Yeah.
What was your take on Minions as a movie that didn't make you think too much?
A+. It succeeded there. So I was actually, I like the Despicable Me movies.
I especially like the first one. I think it's a really good movie.
Yeah, and I liked the Minions in them.
Yep.
They're funny and cute and added an extra dimension of humor. So when I saw that there was a Minions movie, I was like, oh, okay. It turns out it's a lot. You can't have too much of a good thing. An entire movie devoted to them was not what I wanted.
Agreed.
It's
like an entire movie devoted to Ewoks or something.
I dozed off a couple of times.
Two. I had a Facebook friend who posted that the best way to watch Minions is with an earbud in one ear listening to an audiobook.
Yeah.
What did your child think?
So this was really funny. So the end of the movie, we turned to each other. And she's like, did you like it? And I said, it was okay. And she said, I loved it.
Okay. Oh, target demographic.
So I thought, well, that's good. You're supposed to.
We thought that the jokes in the movie or the cultural references, though, were like playing to the grandparents of your child.
They're
like
so
all
dated.
The 60s stuff. And
yes.
I mean, because I grew up with my mom and the oldies station, I know all of those songs and things. But I can imagine it just goes over the head of 90% of the people who watch the movie.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I'm trying to think. There was nothing in the movie where I was like, all right, that was clever. That was good.
I think I laughed at something, but I can't remember what it was.
You see? Exactly.
I was glad Allison Janney was in it.
I liked that. Yeah, Michael Keaton. And I thought, you know, I could recognize John Hamm.
It was
kind of weird.
I like Sandra Bullock. It was just kind of like, I don't know.
I was okay when it was over.
I read a bunch of reviews that were kind of like, well, you know, merchandising. Hitting various notes.
Yeah.
Sort of, I don't know.
I think overall it made me sad just because I liked them in the Despicable Me movies, and now I'm just going to be like, I don't like you anymore. Oversaturation.
I was hoping that the way they picked up with Gru at the end would mean that they couldn't make any other Minion movies.
That's right, we've ended.
But that doesn't mean they can't like go off after Gru or whatever.
No. So, I mean, I would say not one you have to see in the theater.
Right. And we actually didn't take Little G because some of the stuff I saw in the preview made me think, maybe not.
You know, I think there were a lot of jokes that went over Emma's head.
Yes.
Which is okay. I mean, when we saw Inside Out, there was a lot that went over her head. And
that's true.
I appreciate children's movies that do that because, you know, they realize that adults are taking the children, so they need, you know, they're going to put something in there for the adults. But, yeah, no.
So to go back to my preoccupation with female representation, there were 4 female characters in Minions then. The Scarlet Overkill, the Queen, Alice and Janney, and her daughter. Right?
Yeah.
Because all the Minions aren't male.
Right. I assume they're male. They have male names.
Right, they do all have male names. Yeah. And someone on Twitter was mentioning that all of the ants in Ant-Man were referred to as he, which is obnoxious also.
Oh, and I guess not scientifically correct?
That is what I have been led to believe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So far we are not doing well with women in movies, but then you went and saw Trainwreck.
Okay, so yes, the Trainwreck does pass the Bechdel test, although a lot of the conversations that they have are about, you know, relationships, because it's a romantic comedy.
Sure, okay.
And so I haven't seen Inside Amy Schumer. Her show. So I don't have a lot of experience with her. To me, she looks like female Will Ferrell, which is fine. I like Will Ferrell. It's not a
dig at all.
Not a dig. So yeah. When I see her, I think, oh, comedian.
Yeah. And, like physical comedy, right?
Right.
Yeah.
So I think the best part about the movie was that it was less a romantic comedy than like a movie about her relationship with her dad and her sister and the guy that she falls in love with and like how she deals with that. And so I think it did a good job with that stuff. The best part really was LeBron James though.
So this is what I've been hearing. Yeah.
Because at a certain point you're like, wait, isn't it time for us to have more LeBron now?
And that's always what you want.
Right?
You want to be wanting more.
Yeah. So I definitely wanted more of LeBron. You know, it was kind of predictable at the end.
Sure.
But that's fine. It was fine.
Was it funny?
I don't think it was revolutionary. There were parts of it that I laughed at. There were a few parts that I winced at. I understand that a fair amount of it is based on like her, it's autobiographical, like her dad and her sister. So, but I think it's worth seeing. And, I'm not sure I would like be going through the library shelves in a couple years and be like, oh yeah, let's watch Trainwreck again. You know?
Yeah, I do.
Unlike Clueless, for example.
Let's just watch that over and over. So I haven't seen her TV show either. My exposure to her has been very limited. I did see an interview with her on the Today Show as she was promoting Trainwreck, and I was not impressed. Mainly because it felt like she was trying very hard to be a character.
Yeah.
And I was left with the impression like, you know, you're not someone I would want to hang out with. But I adore Bill Hader.
Yes.
So that would probably be my main reason behind seeing the movie. That and everything I've been hearing about LeBron James. Like, I gotta see this.
Yeah, but you could probably just, like, find clips of his part. I mean, and he's gonna be talking mostly to Bill Hader, so then you're gonna be set.
Oh, perfect. Okay, good.
Because there's like a good part where he's telling Bill Hader he needs to visit him in Cleveland, and Bill Hader's like, and he's like, he used to visit me all the time in Miami. There's no difference.
So does he play himself?
He plays himself, but he's like a, he's very stingy, so like he doesn't want to pay for dinner, and he wants his parking validated.
That's awesome. Okay. So would you recommend Trainwreck as a summer film? Like, do you have to see it in the theater?
I don't think you need to see it in the theater, no.
Okay, so this is you can wait for it to come on DVD.
Yeah, I think so. And I think, we should support female artists, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
And it didn't have, it wasn't super gross.
Okay.
Even though it was, what's his name?
Apatow.
Yeah, that guy. So that was good. But, I don't think, here's the thing. There aren't enough romantic comedies, apparently, because almost all the previews were for gross horror movies.
Woo! Okay, let's talk about previews.
Ugh, I hope I never have to see Paper Towns preview again.
Oh, okay, sorry. So I didn't see that one. That one didn't show before.
No, that was earlier in the summer.
Ant-Man or... I haven't seen that one at all, though, with any of the
movies.
Oh,
well, you're lucky. The people sitting in front of us had, like, a Paper Towns poster that they had been given at the box office. And so Scary Cara Delevingne was, like, staring at me if I looked over. Scary
Cara Delevingne. Oh, God. Well, so I'm trying to remember what landmark previews that I saw.
Well, so while you're thinking, I will say that the last one of Minions, I think, was the Star Wars preview, and I had diligently avoided seeing it on my computer, and I was like, by the end, I was kind of close to tears, but I don't know if it was an excitement or dread.
It's an excitement.
It's okay.
It's super duper an excitement.
Okay.
Yeah, super. I can't believe you got a Star Wars preview. I did not get a Star Wars preview. You know what I got? I got the Gallows.
Ew.
Yeah.
Sorry. Did you get the one that's about, what's it called? It's like Next Door. And it's the guy from, oh my God, I can't remember anything anymore.
You're like my mom.
The guy from Arrested Development.
Oh, The Gift?
Oh, yeah, The Gift. Thank you.
I had seen that earlier.
We've seen that twice now. I'm like, oh, just whatever you did in your past, why don't you give him the thing he's looking for?
Give him what he wants so he'll go away.
Or be honest with your wife. One of the two. So there were, seriously, out of the three movies, we saw a lot of previews, and there was some overlap, and there were two movies I might have seen, one of which was Star Wars, and the other one was the Man from U.N.C.L.E.
Oh, yeah, I've been seeing that one a lot on TV.
Well, I don't have that problem.
There was nothing I saw a preview for that I was like, oh, yeah, I'm definitely going to see that. In fact, most of them, I was like, nope, don't need to see that one either. Which is kind of sad because previews are my favorite part. But
sorry.
I know. That's all right. So let us know, oh dear listeners, if you've seen any of these movies, what you think a summer movie is, what you think of these movies, what you thought of LeBron James and Trainwreck.
He is the best. I'm looking at the August movie releases and I don't see any that I'm, like, really super tempted by, except for maybe Pixels.
Okay, so all the reviews,
that's not August.
Yeah, it's out now.
Yeah.
And the reviews are basically, like, Adam Sandler has nailed the last nail in his coffin.
Oh, great. All right.
But it does have Peter Dinklage, so...
Okay.
Yeah, I'd be up for one more summer film if
yeah, I'm looking, but I don't see any.
I did see a preview for Ricky and the Flash.
No,
I'm not seeing.
Never again. No more Ricky and the Flash. I've seen that preview too many times.
Well, so I stared at it dumbfounded.
Why? This is the one with Meryl Streep as the Rock.
Yes.
I'm not going to say star.
Right, as the Rock singer and her real life daughter playing her daughter. And I just, at the end of the preview, I didn't know whether I was coming or going. It just made me sad, I think, that movie.
I think that's the kind of movie that you're just like, oh, okay.
We could just go see Shaun the Sheep. And
yeah, I do like Shaun the Sheep.
I did see a lot of previews for that. Lots and lots of previews for Shaun the Sheep. Yeah, I'm not seeing anything either that I absolutely need to go to.
I went to September... The Intern with Anne Hathaway
and God.
De Niro.
No.
All right. Well, anyway, this is why we're having our summer movie episode now.
Yeah. Yeah. And perhaps we will go see The Man from U.N.C.L.E.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah.
It looked kind of like cool.
It looks summer movie-ish.
Car chasey.
Yeah.
Good costuming.
Good costuming, yeah. I mean, the other one was, the other kind of big blockbustery thing is the new Mission Impossible.
Yeah.
But
that has Tom Cruise in it.
Okay, which we're going to talk about Tom Cruise later in this episode. So we'll just pause that. Yeah.
Maybe we should move on to that.
Let's move on to part two of our episode.
Yeah.
So... what was it that you asked me?
Okay, so the concept of this was, I was just thinking about, because you were going home to visit your mom.
Uh-huh.
And I had been home recently, and I was just thinking about, like, pop culture that we associate with home, or that's from the place that we came from, or that we grew up with in that way. Like, you grow up with things that you know about, and you're not sure if everyone knows about them.
Yeah.
Or if it's just a thing that you know about. So, for example, where I grew up in Salt Lake City, and I spent the first 17 years of my life there. And we, as a matter of course, everyone read the Great Brain books.
Yeah.
I don't know if you had to read those.
Okay.
There are a series of books by John D. Fitzgerald. And it was about this kid who's really smart and who's always, like, trying to, like, pull things off.
Okay, so I'm looking at the covers. They look familiar. I don't know. I may have read one or two.
The books were illustrated by Mercer Mayer. So they're, like, not completely...
obscure.
Obscure. But they're set in, like, the late 1800s.
Yeah.
In Utah.
Okay.
And so I think if you weren't... in Utah, maybe you aren't like, oh yeah, of course we read those. I could be wrong.
Okay, no, I get it. Yeah.
So that's concept. But then I started like looking up things that had been like filmed in Utah or musicians that were from Utah and being like, oh yeah. So do you want to alternate or do you want to just have like a list?
Oh, let's alternate. You start.
Okay.
Yeah, because that's how I took it, too.
I just did start.
Oh, I'm sorry. No, so the way I took it was, like, how is our home represented in pop culture?
Yeah.
So, I'm from Arizona, and I grew up in a tiny, tiny, tiny little town called Bisbee, where I spent the first 14 years of my life, and then I moved to Tucson for high school and college. And Arizona... actually has a film studio. So back in the 40s, 50s, 60s, most of the Westerns were filmed out there at a film studio that is now called Old Tucson. And because it's like old Wild West sort of buildings and stuff. But I was looking at recent-ish stuff that was filmed there. And by the way, Little House on the Prairie was filmed there.
Ooh.
Yeah. So Three Amigos was filmed there. And I don't know if you remember Tombstone.
I do. From a few years ago. I knew of it.
Yeah, but... yeah. And also Young Guns.
Oh, Young Guns.
Young Guns was filmed there. But so what was weird was watching Three Amigos in the theater and being like, those mountains look familiar.
I think I know those.
Wait a minute. And so, yeah, so that's been kind of fun, is that, you know, you can recognize certain places because of having been filmed right where I grew up.
So there are certain parts of Utah that are often used for such things.
Uh-huh.
In southern Utah, like the very beginning of Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade, where he's like on the train.
Yes.
Or like where their house is.
Yes.
But most of the movie was not filmed in Utah, just that part. Movies like The World's Fastest Indian, I don't know if you ever saw that, but
yeah.
The speed trials are like on the Salt Flats, which is right outside of Salt Lake City. So there are certain movies that you like, you would just watch to see the scenery.
Yeah.
So the High School Musical series.
Oh.
My ex-spouse went to the high school that they like, it's East High, is the rival high school to the high school I went to, which is West High.
Oh.
I know, right? And all through, like, at some point in high school, they were filming the TV series of The Stand in Salt Lake City. And so, like, I had classmates who were like, yeah, we couldn't go down our street today because they were filming The Stand. and they also filmed Touched by an Angel in Utah. I know. Right?
That's awesome.
But most of the fun I got out of watching things like Big Love was so I could be like, no, that's they're trying to make that look like Utah, but I don't think it is.
So, yeah. Okay, so that's the second part of this. The other thing I wanted to say was that there was stuff filmed, like, in Tucson proper. Revenge of the Nerds was filmed on my college campus. So a lot of this stuff, like, that was the college and Revenge of the Nerds. And Can't Buy Me Love was filmed in Tucson. And so, like, there's a big scene where they're at the mall. And so, like, that's the Tucson Mall. So it was always fun to be like, oh, hey. But the other thing that I was thinking about was how Arizona is represented in pop culture. And the one that always comes to mind is the movie Practical Magic with Sandra Bullock and Nicole Kidman.
Is that set in Arizona?
No, it's not. It's set in like New England somewhere, I think, like an
island.
That's
what I thought.
Yeah. But a sheriff comes from Arizona. And he, like, you expect a tumbleweed to follow him out of his car. Because, of course, he's wearing cowboy boots. And he talks...
Well, yeah, isn't that how you all dress?
And he talks with an accent. You know, he's got, like, this kind of Texas twang. In every single movie where there's somebody from Arizona, or generically Southwest, that's how they are. And it drives me nuts. Because none of us have accents.
No, I can hear your accent right now. You talking like that? I left Utah and I went to school in Ohio and I got asked if I knew any polygamists.
So you are familiar with stereotypes.
I am.
Mm-hmm.
No, I don't. Or maybe I did, but I didn't know they were polygamists.
Yeah. Okay. That's fair.
I knew someone who had a house that was like, that had a secret passage to the house next door.
Ooh.
Right?
Wow, that's cool.
Right?
Yeah.
But I did not...
May have been used for polygamy. You don't know.
Probably. Who knows? So, yeah, we have that stereotype also that, you know, it's just full of polygamy and Mormons and that's it.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Well, so, and you know, we're all hicks in Arizona. And so this is something that I really try to think about when I watch movies that represent, you know, people from other cultures or states, that sometimes it's not going to be as represented on my screen.
Right. So is there any movie or TV show, I suppose, where you're like, yes, this is an accurate representation? Not yet.
No. So it's hard because, I mean, if it's a Western, I can be like, yeah, that's what it's like out in the desert. But no, I probably, because to me, it's like anywhere else, you know, there's not anything that would set it apart. It's not like everyone, you know, it's not like it's California and everyone's a surfer, or, you know, or I don't know, Texas and everyone goes to the rodeo. It just,
I think maybe that's a stereotype.
It just kind of feels like, I think if they were to make something that was the way Arizona really is, or the way Tucson really is, it would be indistinguishable from, you know, normal town USA in many ways.
What about Raising Arizona?
So it's been forever since I've seen that movie. I don't actually think it was filmed in Arizona.
I don't know. I was just being
annoying. Think it was just the name of the person. No, I mean, you know, there are lots of movies where people like drive through Arizona, and usually it's because they have to do a snapshot of something. You get a little bit of that stereotype. So just kind of. Yeah, it is how it is.
So I will say that my quintessential movie set in Utah was made by a Utah-based director named Trent Harris, and it's called Reuben and Ed.
Reuben and Ed, okay.
It's from 1991. It stars Crispin Glover.
Oh, my God. Okay.
He has long hair. And the line I remember is, my cat can eat a whole watermelon.
So that is Utah to you.
Yeah, this is the movie that says Utah to me. Reuben and Ed. I don't even know if it's available anywhere. But it's a classic. We used to watch it a lot.
So, but why does it best represent?
It just, like, if I were to watch it, I would be transported immediately back to high school.
Oh, okay.
And I would, like, it was released in 91, which is the time I was there. It was filmed in Salt Lake City and Goblin Valley State Park, which is one of my favorite state parks. Also, the location of the Killer's Human video, I learned.
Oh, hey, okay.
I don't know, so out of all of these that I've found, like, you know, where there's some footage, like Footloose or whatever, I wouldn't watch those and be like, oh, this reminds me of home. I would just be like, oh, it's Footloose.
I will say that the one thing that reminded me of home was actually not set or filmed in Arizona.
Perfect.
It was set and filmed in Albuquerque, and it was Breaking Bad. And Albuquerque is very much like Tucson, like just in terms of like the natural landscape, but also the way the city's set up and how the houses look and the roads and everything. And so that was as close as I've seen.
I think that's a good analogy. Like, things can really remind you of home. It's a region.
Yeah.
There's arbitrary state lines.
Yeah. This is true. Yeah. If it was a lot like Tucson. So that one always There was always an odd sort of homesickness when I would watch Breaking Bad.
Yeah, I think that's the way I feel about, mostly about music when I listen to it.
Mm-hmm.
So let me switch gears.
Yeah.
To music, now that the quintessential musical group is the Mormon Tabernacle Choir, of course.
Of course!
Or the Osmonds. But I don't actually listen to them, like, regularly.
All right.
And so I was, like, looking up lists of bands. There was this one article that was like, bands you didn't know were from Utah. And I was like, you're right, I didn't know Neon Trees was from Utah. I had no idea. Or Imagine Dragons.
Really?
Who knew? But I did know. So the ones I have listened to that might be known nationally, or like David Archuleta, who was on American Idol.
Yes.
I knew so many people named Archuleta in high school.
Oh.
Or Shadazy, which was like a country girl group.
I have not heard of them in a long time. Yes.
Okay. Well, there you go. They're like sisters from Utah. And then there were some like Utah specific artists like Peter Breinholt and people you would just never have heard of, Nancy Hansom. They're probably not even making music anymore. I don't even know.
Aww.
Those are like some of the first concerts I went to.
Yeah, you talked about the Peter Breinholt one.
I know. I can't.
Yeah. Can't let him go.
She was, yeah. So, I also, do you have anything else on your list over there? Do you have anything musical?
So a couple of kind of big musical names. Linda Ronstadt is from Tucson.
All right.
And Jimmy Eat World is from Arizona. I believe they're from the Phoenix area. And I think Ozo Motley, I don't know if you're familiar with them. I can't remember if they're from Tucson or L.A.
Same difference.
I think they're from L.A., but they've spent a lot of time in Arizona. And Calexico is also spent a lot of time in Arizona. So, yeah, there's a fair amount of music coming out of Arizona.
So the other, like, things that I dug up on my adventure,
yeah,
my reference question. So it was, like, famous people born in Salt Lake or famous people who lived in Salt Lake or
uh-huh.
something.
Uh-huh.
And so Roseanne.
Like, Barr?
Like, Roseanne Barr. Like, I knew, or I met someone that used to be, like, her neighbor and was friends with her and when she was growing up.
Oh.
And then there's Ken Jennings, of course. And then, we should talk about this when we were talking about movies, but so Robert Redford has his, like, Park City
Sundance
Music Festival thing, and it's like a big deal. Like, Park City's really bloomed as a result and became like a resort destination, not just in the winter, but in the when he holds the film festival.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
So Robert Redford's like a thing, and my mom once got to sing at one of his Christmas parties,
like at his house.
Yeah, like at his ranch or whatever he has up there.
Whoa.
I know, right?
That's pretty... That's like Kevin Bacon level.
Right? I'm just going to drop the mic now.
Wow. Yeah, no, the closest thing I have to that was somebody I used to work for was really good friends with Barbara Kingsolver.
All right.
Who lived in Tucson. But yeah, that's it. That's all I got.
Yes, and we're done. So if you listening to this want to tell us your top cultural, what you feel represents your area of the country culturally that you like.
Yeah,
you like, dislike intensely. Could be that too.
Oh yeah. How does pop culture get your area wrong?
Oh yeah.
Do you have polygamists and tumbleweeds? So let's move on because I got to talk about Tom Cruise. So we're going to talk about musical obsessions. And I thought about this one for a long time, and then I got really upset today. So my musical obsession was that song by The Weeknd, you know, the I Can't Feel My Face song, When I'm With You.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, you know it. It's on the radio all the time.
Okay.
And so I was like, yeah, that's going to be it. And then this morning I find out that last night Tom Cruise was on Jimmy Fallon, and he did that as a lip sync song.
Oh.
And now I don't know what to do. Because I'm so torn because, you know, like, I still really like that song, but Tom Cruise.
Yeah, but you can't let him ruin it.
So that's
just means that he likes it also.
I'm gonna go with it. I'm gonna stay with it.
Okay.
But Tom Cruise really needs to stop butting into my my stuff.
He needs to, I don't know, retire.
Also, I learned he's 53.
Oh, thank you. I was just gonna ask how old Tom Cruise was now. We play a game which is called "How old is that celebrity now?" Closest without going over. 53.
Yeah.
53. All right. Mm-hmm. So my musical obsession is the new Carly Rae Jepsen single, Runaway With Me.
Yes. Hey. No, no, no. It's so catchy.
Right?
Yes.
I dare you not to have it stuck in your head.
No.
But I also have, and we can call this my obsession. I read an article called "No Queer Women Aren't Just Experimenting," just experimenting is in quotes, on BuzzFeed. And it's a great article and you should read it. But it had a little analysis of the Demi Lovato song "Cool for the Summer."
Okay, so that song I actually can't listen to all the way because it annoys the hell out of me. So you're going to have to tell me what happens in the song.
We heard it in the car, and I was like, wait, what? What?
Oh, let's turn it off.
In this song. This is worse than Katy Perry.
So what happens in the song?
What happens in the song? Okay. So do you want me to do a dramatic reading of it?
Do you have the lyrics?
I have the lyrics up.
Yes.
Demi Lovato, "Cool for the Summer."
Do it.
"Tell me what you want, what you like. It's okay. I'm a little curious, too." "Tell me if it's wrong. If it's right, I don't care. I can keep a secret. Can you? Got my mind on your body and your body on my mind. Got a taste for the cherry. I just need to take a bite. Don't tell your mother. Kiss one another. Die for each other.
Wow.
We're cool for the summer." That is exactly how lesbian relationships are, with that, the dying and everything.
That escalated very fast. But,
well, the Well of Loneliness, it's the you know, she's going back to the classics.
But it's only cool for the summer.
Like, yeah.
I'll die for you, but only until September.
"So, take me down into your paradise. Don't be scared because I'm your body type. Just something that we want to try because you and I were cool for the summer. Tell me if I won, if I did, what's my prize? I just want to play with you too, even if they judge. Fuck it. I'll do this time. I just want to have some fun with you. Chorus. Body type. Don't tell your mother. Cherry." I'm just paraphrasing now. So the very end, it's like repetition of "Cool for the Summer" and "I'm your body type" and "It's just something that I want to try," et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
I don't understand the body type line. "I'm your body type."
Like, I think she's trying to say, like, "I'm a woman too."
Oh, okay. Not like "we could share clothes."
Yeah, I don't think she means that we're both pear shaped.
Oh my god. Okay, so I can't get through the song just because I hate the way it sounds. I never actually listened to the lyrics.
Okay, well, I was listening to the lyrics and being like, what?
Holy moly. That kind of fills me with all kinds of rage.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. Hmm.
So is that what you...
That's what I'm obsessed with because I'm like, ah!
So was the article about this song or did it just mention it?
Mentions this song. Basically, it's about the the sort of okayness with culture of with girls experimenting and calling it just a phase and not giving it any weight or understanding that it's serious. And here's what it says about the song. Qualifying queerness in all these ways, just for the summer, just for college, just for the moment, just for this one celebrity, just for this one relationship, just for this one short-lived phase, protects women in a way. They can dip their toes into queer experience without having to fully commit to queer identity and the slew of anti-gay vitriol that comes along with it. Of course, there are going to be women for whom a dip or two will remain the full extent of their same-sex experiences, to which they are more than entitled. But qualifying queerness at large doesn't protect most queer women in the long term who want more than just. Just a phase, just for the summer, you know, like, ugh.
Well, and that's always been what's bothered me about the Katy Perry song, is it...
Yes,
it,
exactly.
It reduces it to something that is supposedly acceptable and palatable and takes actual experiences and glosses over them and just buries them.
So the best part of this article, though, really is a little widget that says what euphemism best describes your queer lady relationship. Let's see. Well, I'm going to try it now. It's flipping through. Long time gal pal.
Perfect.
So we'll share a link to it.
Wow. Yeah.
I think it deserves a little more digging into. And I just think that the whole idea is interesting. And the question of bisexuality that you talk about sometimes, where, you know, it's okay to be interested in both sexes.
Yeah, the bisexual erasure is something that really gets me all kind of crazy. And might have to be another show.
All right. We'll celebrate bisexuals on a future show.
That sounds awesome. Oh, yeah. So my obsession, obviously.
Oh, sorry.
is, as I tweeted earlier this evening, I am reading my first ever Karen Slaughter book. So I've actually read some stuff that she's written online. I think it was like a Facebook post or an article or something. And I thought she was hilarious. But I haven't read any of her books in person too.
Yeah.
So I haven't read any of her books. So I kept seeing people after, I think it was BEA, with arcs of Pretty Girls.
That's when we got an arc and we read the first two sentences and we were like, nope.
So it's scary as hell. But it's really, really, really good. And I'm excited to finish it and read all of her other books. Yeah.
Okay, good. Way to go, Karen Slaughter.
And I've actually found a book that I want to finish, which, you know, was not happening.
Well, yeah, which is awesome. I am very happy for you.
Have you found one that you wanted to finish?
I did. And I just got another one. So I read The Just City by Joe Walton earlier this year, and I just got The Philosopher Kings in, and I'm, like, super excited.
Yay. Good. Good, good, good. I am actually, before I started the Karen Slaughter, I was reading a book which my e-reader told me I had finished, but I have no recollection. So I was just reading it again, you know, for giggles.
Well...
seeing if at any point it kicked in, and I was like, oh
yeah, okay. This seems very familiar.
But so far, no. So
okay, well, maybe it just, like, zoomed to the end somehow, and...
That's what I'm hoping. That is what I'm hoping. So, I also want to kind of reiterate that we do have this Spotify playlist, so if at any point anyone wants to tell us what their current musical obsession is, we will happily add it.
If it's available.
If it's available on Spotify, please don't send us Taylor Swift songs. Which we didn't talk about, but I went and saw Taylor Swift.
Oh my god, I forgot all about that, Debbie! Was it the best thing ever?
It was pretty amazing. But the best thing ever was that one of her opening acts was Haim.
Oh, and so you were super happy, weren't you?
I was. I about peed my pants. And they were amazing. They were like a 70s rock band. There was one part where they were like, we're just going to pretend we're in our living room and jam out. And
we're like, okay.
They just played for like 20 minutes and it was brilliant. It was amazing. The Taylor Swift show, I've never seen a concert like that. It was like huge, and there were fireworks and many dancers, and there was a rotating, elevating catwalk. It was quite the spectacle. I thought she did a really good job rearranging some of her old songs to match the theme of 1989. So she still played some old ones, but the arrangements were different.
And hey, that's cool. I like that.
Yeah, and it fit with kind of the whole theme of the show. I thought she talked too much between songs. I thought there was too much patter. And it was a little bit... I mean, then again, I'm not, an 8 to 12-year-old girl.
What did your child think?
So, this was her first concert.
Ever.
It was a Christmas present. So we've been planning this for a while.
I remember.
Yeah. And I specifically got seats that were fairly high up. So that, because she does get very overwhelmed by a lot of people and by loud noises. So like she even plugs her ears in the movie theater. So I picked something that was pretty high up, but we still had a clear view. And at one point, like, she was okay, the opening acts. Like, she kind of loosened up a little bit, but she seemed very, like, out of it. And it didn't help that it was really, really hot and humid when we first got there.
Was it outside or inside?
It was outside. It was at Soldier Field.
Oh, okay.
And we saw a girl, like, pass out from the heat and hit her head on the
cement.
Oh, my God. And it was awful. And so it took her a little while to get into it, but by the time... probably like the second Taylor Swift song was playing, she turned to me and she had this look like, can you believe we're here? And it was, I actually spent a lot of the concert just watching her because it, like, she's just transfixed. And she, of course, sang along to every song and screamed and danced and cheered and had just the best time.
Awesome.
So yeah.
Sounds fabulous.
It was a lot of fun. So I highly, if you like any of her songs, I highly recommend trying to go see her because it's a
I put it on my bucket list.
The best part was we had been reading earlier in the day because she played two shows in Chicago and we went to the second one. And at the first one, she brought out, she's been bringing out special guests throughout the tour. And so the first night in Chicago, she brought out Andy Grammer, who sings that awful song I hate. So we were really hoping that she would not bring him again. And then we started reading all these things that said Lady Gaga was in town and maybe it would be Lady Gaga. And I was like, I will pee my pants. And so she started to do the patter of introducing somebody and Em and I were like clutching each other. And then she said this guy's name and the whole stadium erupted. And Em and I were like, who? And it was some country singer. And we felt like the only two people who had no idea.
No, well.
But he came
at least it wasn't Andy Grammer.
It was not Andy Grammer.
He has a song I like, aside from the song that you don't like.
Oh, see, I that was the first one of his I've ever heard.
Well, maybe we should add it to the playlist.
Okay, yeah. We'll add the other one. The good one. All right, so anyway, Taylor Swift...
Oh, are we still recording?
We are. This one went long, but it's our 25th, so that's okay.
So we're giving you 25 extra minutes.
Just a few. So thank you so much for listening, and thank you for listening to the past 24 episodes, too. Honestly, I did not think it would go this long, so I am just chuffed as hell.
I'm suppressed by our longevity.
Yeah, it's awesome. So I'm Carolyn. You can find me all over the internet at Paper Squared, PaperSquared.
I'm Anna, and you can find me online at Helga Grace, HelgaGrace. And our in and out music was provided by Julie Jurgens. You can find her on Twitter at Hi Miss Julie.
Hi.
HIMISSJULIE.